Hi, this is Sam Simon.
I just like to know.
Hi, folks. We're going to give it one more minute and then we'll kick off the call. Hi everyone, this is the NQF team. We know that some folks are still dialing in who are members of the panel, so we're going to start in just about 2 minutes. Thank you for your patience.
Hello? Hello?
Hi there. Thank you all for joining today's Scientific Methods Panel Subgroup Number 2 Measure Evaluation Call. We'll kick off the call with a roll call of subgroup members. First off, do we have David Sella on the line?
Yes. Hi.
Thanks for joining, Dave. Joe
Hi,
Koenig.
I'm Miranda. This is Ashley. We should combine the roll call with the disclosure of interest.
Okay.
So maybe if you just want to start and just give an overview of the call and the kind of logistics of the webinar, I'm sorry, of the conference call.
No
That'd
problem.
Be great.
Is there a webinar, by the way? Is there anything online that I did not get that?
No, sorry, I misspoke. There's no webinar.
Okay.
All righty. So a discussion guide was sent out to subgroup members Tuesday afternoon. That document will guide today's discussion, and we'll follow the order presented on that document. Consensus was not reached for 3461 and NQF status. Have pulled 0005, so both measures are slated for discussion today. All other measures will not be discussed during today's call unless a subgroup member would like to pull a measure. If you choose not to discuss any additional measures, the decisions from your preliminary analyses will be made final. At the end of the call, we will pull the group to see if any subgroup members would like to pull a measure for discussion. In that same email containing your discussion guide, there was also a survey link to a SurveyMonkey. We'd like to ask you to pull up that survey now and cast your votes on either reliability and or validity after the conclusion of each measure discussion.
And where's the link? Sorry,
it's included in the email that went out Tuesday afternoon around 3 p.m. from the Scientific Methods Panel inbox. And when it's time to vote, we will prompt you to do so. We expect to review all measures during today's call, but we do have a follow-up meeting on the books for Monday, March 18th, from noon to 2 p.m. To discuss any outstanding items. And if we do address all agenda items today, then we can go ahead and cancel that meeting. And finally, I just want to note that this is a public call, and developer representatives are on the line to answer questions from staff or panel members. However, there's no opportunity for a public comment. And for record-keeping purposes, we ask that each subgroup member or developer please state their name before speaking. And so, Ashley, I'll pass it to you for DOI's roll call.
Okay, thank you, Miranda. Hi, everyone. This is Ashley Wilbon. I'm a senior director here at NQF. I'll be leading the disclosure of interest as well as a discussion for 3461, which is one of the measures that did not reach consensus. So we do disclosure of interest, oral disclosures of interest for all of our measure evaluation calls. So bear with me as we kind of make it through the preamble for this. But essentially, you receive disclosure of interest forms when you were named to the panel, and then we send you measure-specific disclosure of interest forms with each measure review cycle that ask you about your relationship to any of the measures that you reviewed or any related or competing measures that we have identified through the process. So between these two forms, there's a lot of questions about your activities, your degree of involvement with the measures. And so in the interest of transparency today, we're going to ask that you orally disclose any information you provided that you believe may be relevant to this to the panel's work today, specifically the measures that you reviewed as a part of this review cycle. You don't need to, you know, name specific things from your resume unless they're directly related to this work. This would include grants, research, consulting, and both paid and unpaid development activities related to the work of this group. So on your agenda, you can see the list of measures that were reviewed by this subgroup. So 3461, which is a functional status change for patients with neck impairments, CAPS clinician and group surveys, consumer assessment of health providers and systems, HCAPS survey, the HCAPS in-center hemodialysis survey, CAPS home health care survey, and then several functional change measures that are around change in scores for various aspects of functional status, self-care, mobility, and then also a series of measures around long-term inpatient rehab facility functional outcomes as well as the collaborate measure for shared decision-making and the child hospital consumer assessment of healthcare providers and systems. So, again, based on that, we're going to, as we call your name, if you could let us know that you're here and then also whether or not you have any interest to disclose. Also to point out that just because you disclose does not mean that you have a conflict. This is all, again, just in the interest of transparency. So I will call your name, and then please let us know, again, your name and any interest to disclose. David Sella?
Hi, that's me. I don't know if this is a conflict, but just for the sake of caution, I am using the collaborate measure in a study, and Glenn Elwin is a consultant on that study.
Okay. Is it paid or any involvement with the developer?
We are paying him as a consultant on a study that we're doing here. It's funded by a foundation, Peterson
okay.
Foundation in New York.
Okay. But you did not participate in the actual development of collaborative,
no,
correct?
No, I'm not involved in the development of the measure at all, but we're using it.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's a conflict, but just so you know. And by the way, could somebody resend the Tuesday email? I apologize, but I've looked in my deleted box and my inbox, and I don't see an email that came Tuesday. Could you resend it so I can get to the SurveyMonkey?
We'll send it now.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, David. Mary Beth? Are you there?
Hi. Yes, I'm here. I don't have any conflicts of interest in the last 5 years. The only thing I need to disclose is that I was originally working with the CAPS team back in 2005. So that's quite a while.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much. Joe Kunish?
Yes, hi, this is Joe. I do not have any interest to disclose, and I also didn't, or I can't find the survey email.
Okay, we'll make sure to resend that to everyone. VQ, Lynn?
Yes, I'm here, and I have no involvement in any other measure.
Oh, thank you. David Nairn?
I'm here, no disclosures.
Thank you. Sam Simon?
Hi, I'm here. Nothing to disclose.
Thank you. So, again, we do that in the interest of transparency. If you feel at any point in time that there's any bias on during the review, please feel free to reach out to NQF staff and send us a message. And we will go ahead and jump into review. I did want to point out, as again, as Miranda mentioned, that this is the first time with this new setup of doing the subgroup calls that we're also engaging developers who can be invited to respond to questions based on the panel's questions or needs to understand the measure. So to keep that in mind. I do just want to make sure that the developer for 3461 is on the line.
Hi, this is Deanna Hayes from Photo. I'm here. I need to let you know that our lead scientist on the project was not able to attend the meeting today, so I'll do my best to answer questions, but it's possible I may have to take certain questions and get back with you when Daniel Deutscher is available.
Okay, thank you. I did also just want to, now that we've done kind of disclosures and we know who's on the call, to ask the panel if there's anyone who would like to pull any of the measures in addition to what's already slated for discussion.
Hey, Ashley, this is Karen. We'll ask them that question again at the end after we have the conversation about caps.
Okay.
First caps.
Okay. So you have another opportunity. That sounds great. So with that, let's go ahead and jump into 3461. So I'll start out with an overview and then of the actual measure itself, and then highlight some of the voting results that came back, and then we'll dive into some of the specific discussion items that we've identified based on the individual reviews that were submitted by methods panel members. I did want to point out this measure probably was familiar to some of you. If you reviewed this measure last cycle, it was submitted in the fall cycle of 2018, and there were issues identified by the subgroup at that time that resulted in the measure not passing reliability and validity. So for those of you that are able to access the discussion guide, it is segmented out by the concerns that were identified in the previous review, as well as additional concerns that were identified for this review. So keeping that in mind, just to refresh everyone on this measure, it's a patient-reported outcome performance measure, PRO-PM, consisting of a risk-adjusted change in functional status for patients 14 years of age and older with neck impairments. The change in functional status is assessed using the NEC-FS performance measure. And the measure is adjusted to patient characteristics known to be associated with functional status outcomes and is risk adjusted and is specified for clinician and individual clinician and clinician group practice levels. Based on the level of analysis that is specified for, the threshold for the clinician level is 20 plus patients per year. And at the clinical level, at the clinic level, the threshold is for small clinics, 10 plus patients per year per clinician. For larger clinics, 40 plus patients per year per clinician. It is risk adjusted and uses a statistical model. In terms of the reliability evaluation, so we had one high score, two moderate, no low, and two insufficient, which put this the rating for reliability into the consensus not reach zone. Just a little bit of review of what was done for reliability testing. The testing that they conducted was both at the score level and the data element level. Some of the results here for kind of high level for the testing that was completed is here in the discussion guide. At the patient level, data element testing, they used, it was assessed via internal consistency using Cronbach Alpha and the item response theory. And Cronbach Alpha was 0.98 and the IRT based person reliability score was 0.96. At the clinic level, they looked at the average reliability of clinics meeting the photo threshold of the number of patients per clinic, and that score was 0.79. And then at the clinician level, the average reliability for clinicians with 10 or more was 0.64, and for 20 or more was 0.76. In addition to the reliability of individual scores, they also looked at the standard error of measurement and an analysis of the minimal detectable improvement. In terms of the kind of just high level of some of the concerns that came back with this review cycle, again, there were still some, concerns or lack of understanding in terms of the signal-to-noise analysis and understanding which level of analysis that specific results were applicable to. So with that, I think we'll stick to reliability and kind of jump down to the items to be discussed. This measure did not pass on reliability or validity, and some of the items that were identified and shared back with the developer in the prior cycle that were specific to reliability of the specifications were around the lack of specificity of the definitions and some of the key data elements in the measure, around proxy responses, the episode definition for how the discharge is determined and captured, around the clarity of the number, the numerator statement and the descriptor, and whether or not that was being calculated as a change score, and then clarifying the definition around neck impairment. So our first action item is to just kind of check the pulse with the committee to see, based on your review, whether or not you feel the developer adequately addressed these issues from the prior cycle and their follow-up submission for this cycle. And we can also pause to see if there are kind of any high-level concerns about the measure or questions for the developer before we kind of jump into this discussion.
This is Dave Sella. I don't know. I'm one of the two insufficient graders, and it's possible that the committee can help me with my problem. Maybe I just missed it, but I didn't feel I was able to determine the signal-to-noise ratio. I was fine with the data element reliability, but in terms of the measure, I couldn't find information on to determine signal-to-noise ratio. So it's possible I missed it. Someone can point me to it, and then I would change my vote.
Are there other panel members who might be able to point to that? I'm going to try to find it myself. And in the meantime, if the developer on the phone, if you're able to point in the submission quicker, then maybe we can get to it of where that information could be found. That would be helpful.
I'm seeing it, Dave Aaron here. Page 24 of the measure testing form is at least where I thought I saw it. Now others may say it's insufficient, but at least that's where the heading exists and where the data appear, as far as I can tell.
Yeah. I agree. Was that you, Deanna?
Yes. I was going to say the same thing. Signal to noise. Oh. Use the Adams method illustrated on and described on page, starting on the bottom of page 24.
And this is Karen from NQF. It looks like I'm seeing on a table on page 27 that has the results. Hopefully I'm not looking at a different version than you guys are.
Table 2A2, correct, Karen?
Correct.
No. Okay.
2A2,
II. Yep, okay.
Yeah.
That's right. Method on 24, findings on 27.
I'm pulling up the document.
So it looks like I'll just kind of recite what I'm seeing as others are looking for it. At the clinic level, it looks like the average reliability score was 0.79. At the clinician level for 20 plus patients per clinician, the average was 0.76.
So is this is Sam. So I was the other insufficient, and what I couldn't find in this was an understanding of whether or not these results were derived using the risk-adjusted score for this measure. And again, it might be something that I missed, but I didn't see it.
Is that something that you can clarify, Deanna, or point us I will look as well, but there's somewhere in the submission that you could direct us to or respond to that question.
It was, and I'm looking to see where that would have been stated as well. Like I said, I do apologize. Daniel would have been here, but he had a very extraordinary situation. He's the one who wrote this.
So this is EQ. I just echo what Simon just said. I actually wrote about, I say, the reliability seems to be based on HRM model output. So I was wondering, like, the model specification that relate to what Sam just said, whether the 11 risk variable was included when you fit the hierarchical model, because it's relevant. If the model is different from measure as specified, that would be a concern.
Yeah, I guess, Dave Nierens here again. I always defer to the others in the group who understand the Greek symbols better than I do. But I'm looking back on 24. I'm in the third paragraph from the bottom. We're talking about hierarchical linear models with dependent variable functional status at discharge adjusted for all variables used for risk adjustment. At least that's the basis on which I thought the statistics and the results then were based on risk adjusted.
That's great, Dave. Thank you.
The other piece that I'd point out is on page 27, the first paragraph under results and reliability of providers at clinician and clinic levels. He states in the middle of that first paragraph, that is completed the PROPM, so it should be described better, but, you know, PROPM means that risk adjustment was used. Otherwise, we would have said PROM. We would be happy to clarify once Daniel is back in the land of the living.
Does that address your concerns? I think it was David and CQ about that particular item and whether or not risk adjustment was used, or do you think that you need more explanation?
You're not calling on me. This is Dave Seller, right? You're asking David Nierens?
Yeah, I think it was David Nierens who had that concern. Or maybe I might have mixed up responses.
No,
sorry.
No, sorry. It was Dave Seller in this case.
Oh, Dave Seller.
What?
Sorry.
I didn't ask about risk adjustment. Yes, I asked about the signal to noise.
Okay, then I'm sorry, it wasn't Dave Nierens either. I was the one that spoke and said, here's where in the document I think it describes it. But I didn't have a concern.
Yeah, and this
okay.
is Sam.
It was Sam. It was Sam.
Sam,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
I wasn't writing down names.
It was
me. I apologize, guys.
Sam did it.
I did it. Yep, thank you. That was helpful.
So this is Dave Sella about the signal to noise. Thank you for pointing me to it. And I don't know if this is where you want to go just yet, but I'm certainly comfortable changing my rating, perhaps even to high, but certainly to moderate. And I'm just wondering, should we discuss this 10 patients versus 20 patients issue? I mean, where are we with that?
That's certainly within the realm of the reliability discussion. So,
seemed like
up
below 20 was problematic. I just want to make sure that we're clear on that.
Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, and that was something I raised in my review as well. That I don't know, you know, how NQF used this, if that's something that has to be in the spec, that the measure is not reported for less than 20 in this case, but that was something that was concerning.
Yes, I may defer to Karen to this on that, but I do see how they highlighted that particular row for 20-plus in green, so I'm wondering if that was the intention. I don't know, Deanna, if you could clarify that.
I'm looking. He did that to emphasize that that's the acceptable level of reliability.
Okay.
The 20 for clinicians.
And this
Karen,
is Karen.
Karen, I'm
actually looking at the specifications, and in S15, which is looks like maybe page 6 of the specifications form, but anyway, it's under S15 sampling. It does look to me like that they're saying at the clinician level. For clinicians with 10 or more or 20 more patients per year, they're reporting the reliability. I thought somewhere that I actually saw in the specifications the 20 or more, but my understanding, and Deanna, correct us if we're wrong, but is that what you are suggesting and putting forward? And if it is, and if it's not, spelled out in the MIF. We will make sure in your specifications that it is spelled out.
Thanks, Karen. Yes, that is what we're suggesting.
Okay. Thank you.
Dave Nairns here, just one observation, but this doesn't, I don't think, change our decision that in going down this path, we're basically saying that this 0.7, you know, has the status of a magic number, essentially, that sort of like P05, that although what's underneath it is continuous, we're saying, okay, if you're 0.71, you're good. If you're 0.69, you're bad. You know, the 0.64 level for 10-plus, you know, wasn't awful. It just falls below this 0.7. I don't mind us specifying that it should be 20 or more. I'm okay with that. But just as we think ahead down the road in our work, particularly in this paper we're talking about on reliability for those involved with that, you know, this is one of the things I think we have to get into in more detail. Is there a specific rule of thumb that we're so confident in that we're willing to say better than 0.7 passes, below 0.7 fails?
This is
Yeah,
Deanna. I just want to say we've had similar discussions and are of like minds.
Yeah, that's, I mean, this is Dave Sella. That's a good point, Dave. I think a lot of the discussion is probably off topic for a specific submission like this, but related to this specific, and when we should definitely have it, but related to this submission, I guess I'm wondering, you know, I'm kind of on the fence, because if we say, well, it's only, you know, people with 20 patients or more, then what happens to those who have fewer than 20 patients? And we may be denying the opportunity to evaluate their quality, just because of the magic number issue when actually there's going to be more error in the estimate, but not so much so that they shouldn't be compared and held to the standard. In other words, it's kind of throwing an advantage to providers that have fewer than 20 patients, if I'm thinking about this right. It sort of gets them off the hook. Is that the case with the way this would play out?
Well, I guess just let me check an assumption that the people who belong to and manage and use this database and registry are essentially free to do whatever they want, and they've done very careful analysis here, I think, and, you know, if they want to show data and use data for people with 10, I think that's up to them. I think the NQF endorsement, though, suggests that if CMS is going to use it in MIPS or if somebody else is going to use it, and they choose to follow NQF endorsement, that at that point they would specify a minimum sample size. And, you know, it's always a tough call. You know, you're basically saying if you have 20 cases, then, you know, you're good to go. If you have 19 cases, then you're not good to go. it's just true with any of these arbitrary cutoffs. But, you know, at least to move things forward, recognizing that in the real world there have to be such cutoffs, at least here I'm comfortable calling it 20.
You say you are comfortable or uncomfortable?
I am. I have discomfort and slightly elevated blood pressure, but we got to decide. I'm comfortable in that sense.
Okay.
Okay, so I think that was helpful and certainly something that we are keeping track of these issues for queuing up in future discussions outside of the measure evaluation call. So we'll certainly keep that on the list. So in terms of reliability, I just want to kind of bring us back a bit. It sounds like the concerns about reliability have been resolved. I also just wanted to point out in terms of the previous evaluation, none of the same issues were raised that were identified in the prior evaluation from last cycle. So if I don't hear, I just want to kind of put it out there again to see if anyone has any other concerns with what was identified in the last cycle, assuming that those concerns weren't raised again in this cycle, that all of those, that the panel, the subgroup is okay with the developer having addressed those concerns. And then if all minds are settled, we can go to the reliability vote. So just want to kind of put it out there again and see if there are any lingering concerns about reliability before we call a vote.
None here, Dave C.
Yep, I'm good too. This is Sam.
Okay. We only heard from a couple folks, but I'm assuming since we didn't hear any other major concerns, we'll go ahead and direct you guys to click your vote for reliability for this measure through the SurveyMonkey, and we will move on to the discussion for validity. So again, with the validity high level summary, there were no high votes, 3 moderate votes, 1 low, and 1 insufficient. This again put us in the consensus not reached zone, if you will. Again, as a reminder, as an instrument-based measure, both data element and score level testing are required, which the developer submitted. They performed several types of data element validity testing, as well as measure score validity testing that are listed here, structural validity, construct validity, and so forth. In terms of the concerns that were identified more specifically from the prior cycle, again, the subgroup members were seeking clarity on whether testing was done at the score level and wanting some clarity around the submission and how that was illustrated or demonstrated. The consideration for implications for discerning meaningful difference at the clinician level, if the measure was used in accountability purposes, assuming there was some concern that the results seemed to indicate that there was only significant differences in performance at upper and lower ends of the distribution. Again, concerns with the application of risk adjustment and the possible introduction of bias with the testing of the risk-adjusted change score, the lack of differentiation at the clinic versus clinician level of validity, and again, concerns with the ability of the measure to account for how the change score is accomplished. That some providers could achieve change scores with different based on different types of performance. I guess let me pause there and see if there were any similar concerns that were raised or considered for this review cycle as a point to see whether the developer adequately addressed these concerns based on the previous prior review. Again, none of these seem to be identified in this cycle, so I did just want to raise it in case folks had some questions or concerns to reiterate. Okay, hearing none, some of the concerns that were submitted for the current review cycle, again, was concerns around the use of a chain score versus some external criterion to perform score validity testing. Again, the demonstration of the contract validity was considered to be weak, and that there wasn't compelling evidence of an association between the score and another independent measure or concept of quality care. There is a note here that that NQF is not directive on what types of measures are appropriate for use in score level validation and validity analysis. There's not a lot of direction there, so we leave it to developers to determine the approach that they would like to take to adequately demonstrate validity. There were some conflicting perspectives from some of the methods panel members based on the PAs on the acceptability of the amount of variation in the performance that was described. Some felt that the variation was adequate. Others believe it was minimal given the large testing sample. And the final concern was around the lack of clarity in which testing results demonstrate clinician and score level validity. So I'll pause there and see if any of those concerns were ones that you raised, and if you'd like to share your thoughts with the group on them.
Well, this is Dave C. again. I was trying to wait for somebody else to chime in, but I guess it's me again. I was the insufficient vote, and partly that's just because of a notion that, you know, if you have insufficient reliability, concerns about sufficient reliability, they're going to carry forward to concerns about validity. So that was coloring my review. The score, you know, the data element level of validity, I thought, was mixed, to be honest. Bottom line, I actually thought it was okay. It seems like this is measuring more or less what is intended to be measured, if we use that definition of validity. But there, you know, it wasn't really a unidimensional model fit story where these items cluster together sufficiently in a way where you can be certain that you know what you're measuring. At the end of the day, though, it does appear to perform okay. So I would have, that wasn't the only concern I had. The other concern was, as you mentioned, this, to me at least, clinician level validity, it was not clear to me that the measure carried forward to the clinician. So I just had these concerns. So I scored it as inefficient. I suppose I could have scored it as low, but I said insufficient to carry forward my previous reliability vote. Anyway, that's where I am with it. Maybe others can help me with it.
Well, I can jump in here. Actually, I think I'm one of those who gave it moderate, but I'll just walk through a little bit of the thinking on validity. I did have concerns about a number of things. There's a lot of information was presented here, but a lot of the things under the group validity were basically just said scores differ when you go clinician by clinician, and you can group into 3, you can group into 10, but you're basically just showing that, you know, that there's variation. So I didn't see something about, like truly independent, construct validity. You know, there is a section called known group, headline, known groups validity here. And I thought that was going to be it, but basically what I see under that, I would call risk adjustment. It basically says people who enter with certain characteristics, like being younger or male, have higher or lower scores. Now, I guess you can work backwards and say, you know, those are known groups, meaning there's some independent knowledge that suggests that these groups should do better, and in fact they do, so there we are. But it wasn't known groups in the sense of an independent outcome, like return to work or not, or something like that. The reason I think I ended up moderate was that, and I'm happy to be corrected on the rule here, it seems like in a number of measures, having established face validity is sufficient to at least get you into moderate. And I did see the work here that was done with an expert panel physical therapist. I'm not sure the term face validity was used, but that's what I saw. So I'm happy to be corrected here on the issue of whether a formal run through of a face validity process is enough to at least get you to moderate.
I think you've articulated all the things that were on my mind and that were causing me concern. And this is Dave again, Dave. So I put those very concerns into the category of insufficient because I didn't see a clear known groups. But I too am willing to accept face validity as one of these. You know what? When you see it, this does seem reasonable, sufficient criteria. So. That I think is also another general question that would be helpful to hear from Karen or someone in terms of where NQF is with this.
So this is Karen from NQF. Face validity is allowed for new measures at the score level. So basically the idea would be asking folks whether or not they believe that the results would be able to differentiate good from poor quality. So that's the kind of thing we're looking for. I am not as familiar with this submission, but I believe the face validity that they described was more along the lines of the validity of the items, which we would consider more a data element thing. So if I am correct on that, if that's what they're putting forward, that does not conform to our requirements, first of all, for face validity. And then secondly, because this is instrument-based, we actually do require empirical testing of the measure score. So in other words, some kind of construct validation that you would accept is what we're looking for.
And Karen, I did just want to clarify your question you had was on page 32, the face validity kind of demonstration they describe in 2B, 1I is around the data element.
Yeah. So, I guess we should see if there are others, you know, that would like to chime in here. This is Dave Seller again.
So this is DQ. I rate, I think, moderate, but I do have concern with the performance score validity. May use two ways to correlate with the score. One is based on performance level, the three level, and then the performance decile, right? But they are all based on the same data, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So it's sort of, it's not external criteria. Ideally, you want something like that, both Dave mentioned, the non-group criteria.
Are there any others that would like to, who voted either, I think Dave mentioned he voted insufficient, but I'm not sure if anyone that's spoken already was the person who voted low or someone else who voted moderate that'd want to share their thoughts about that.
Dave Nerys, I'm wondering if we could just ask the measure steward a question. There's a fair amount of material here coming from a body of work that's labeled functional staging change. I didn't see a lot in there that I thought represented some independent validity confirmation, but I'm happy to be instructed if I am missing the point there. Is the functional staging anything other than a classification of the measure score itself?
This is Deanna. The functional staging is a clinical interpretation parameter to interpret the scores. The external marker, if you will. We did have an independent panel of physical therapists not involved who assisted in validating and the functional staging model. the other, to go backwards a bit when you were asking for external markers, would it help if I pointed out that, and I'm losing the table now, there was a table about the MCII, the minimally clinically important improvement. The MCII is based on the global rating of change.
That's as the clinician's global rating or a patient's global rating?
The patient.
So the patient's asked, are you better, worse, or the same? And then the scores are referenced to that rating.
It's the 15-point global rating.
Oh, yeah.
Does that help at all with the external issue?
Okay, so this may help. So if this is pointing us to the results table on the bottom of page 37, I guess if what's embedded in here, I just didn't see the labeling quite clearly. If there's some sort of external, like global assessment of change, and what we see in this table is that there's a strong relationship between the average improvement on the photo score and some separate global assessment of change, I think I might accept that. I just somehow didn't pick that up as being an independent anchor for validity testing at the score level.
My apologies. I probably confused that the MCII with the global rating of change refers to a different table, not the functional staging.
I'm sorry. Okay.
I did two things at once. I'm trying to let you all talk. The functional staging, so I'll tell you what it is and you can decide if you feel that it's independent enough. But the stages 1 through 5, if you look near the bottom of page 36 with the operational definitions, were conceived by physical therapists with experience treating patients with neck problems. So you may or may
so
not
those
consider that.
But those ratings are made on the same patients, but without knowledge of the patient's responses to the questions?
Without knowledge of the patient's responses.
So the functional staging that the physical therapist does, are they using the patient responses to make that rating, or are they giving a rating that's based upon their examination of the patient? Independent of what the...
I think the answer is both. May I back up and tell you how these were developed a bit more?
Yep.
So if you look at table figure 2B1II, the title is at the bottom of page 35, and the actual table starts at the top of 36. So this was the results that I'm sure... Dave Selle, you're familiar with.
Yeah. It's a pretty figure. Yeah.
Isn't it pretty?
Yeah.
So there were, the point was to clinically classify and characterize. So they were clinical descriptions by physical therapists. So for example, I'm a physical therapist. If I look at the far right side of the column, I see, hey, they can do all this high level stuff. And, you know, in physical therapy terms, if you go back to the operational definition, stage 5, as a physical therapist or other healthcare provider who works a lot with patients with neck problems, that's clinically meaningful that I can say this patient can perform vigorous work, sports, and so on. So they were clinically meaningful categories that were developed in an attempt to generally describe the model, that the purpose was clinical interpretation, and then the validation involved a panel of external physical therapists who were blinded to the actual score that the patients got, so they were given.
Yeah, that's what would be. Yeah, so you use the ordering of these functional capabilities and data that's available from the ratings of patients to create these five stages. And so far it's not really external, it's still kind of circular. But then if you take these five stages, I'm trying to kind of go with you here and get this out of the circularity. You see what I mean? It's a nice ordering of functions, and that ordering of functions is used to create the five stages. But if you could then show that, and this is where the global rating comes in. That's actually perhaps more independent. Because if patients agree that they're better and they've moved from one stage to another, then that's a confirmation of the moving from one stage to another.
As you all have pointed out, it's a busy document. And based on the feedback we received last fall, which we were very grateful for, and Daniel worked very hard to address every point, so I'm pleased to hear that some of the same comments did not remain. However, one of the things that he did was remove some of the detail. And one of the things he removed was a Sankey diagram and a little write-up that illustrated empirically how many patients moved from one stage to the other. So we removed that because we thought it was causing problems and it was too much information. But I have it at my fingertips, and we'd be happy to put it back in. It's actually a really interesting diagram.
Did those patients that moved up to a higher stage say they were better, and did the patients that moved down say they were worse?
So I don't think we did that.
If you do that, then you would have it. Then I think you would have it, if you could show that. You see what I mean? So you take people that move, that get better on the staging, and then if they independently say they're better, and compare, and people that get worse on the staging independently say they're worse, then you'd have, that'd be strong validity evidence.
And send the amendment to that. You'd be doing that at the clinic or group level, right? Not at the individual patient level?
We tend to do these things at all three levels. It sounds like what you're asking for is the provider level.
Provider level, right. I'm just clarifying what Dave's discussing here.
Yeah, I would do all of them too. Yeah, I think that. So I don't know if others want to comment on this, but so I was the insufficient person. And if these data were available and submitted, and they were positive, then I would move to moderate or high. If they weren't available or didn't support the story, I might be low. So I don't know how I would proceed in terms of my vote here.
This is Ashley. Let me just ask Deanna, is what Dave is describing, is that something that you have? And based on the analysis that you guys have done, is he describing something that maybe you guys have done, but it's just not in the submission?
I don't think we've done those analyses. I don't think it would take long to do because we already have all of that.
Okay. So
we're happy to do it. But I hate to delay. If this happens to be the only thing and it might cause a delay, an endorsement. I also do want to call your attention back to the separate validity testing that involved the minimal clinically important improvement, which had that external anchor of the global rating of change. And I just want to make sure that in a pinch, you wouldn't consider that sufficient.
It's like we're in the market.
Deanna, this is Karen from NQF. Can you tell me again, just so I know from my notes, what you're referring to? I've lost it. Do you know what page?
Yeah, and I thought there was a table, and I can't find the table. But if you go to the bottom of page 31, 2B1 III, clinically important improvement, it describes that. So the point is that MCII takes into account the patient saying that they were at least somewhat better. And then we take those values and we're able to show how much of the scores aggregated exceeded the MCII.
That looks to me, is that at the patient level or is that rolled up at the clinic and clinician level?
If you go down to middle of page 32, clinician and clinic performance score level, it describes using the MCII and then goes into additional demonstration that it is showing.
I'm having a hard time lining up my page numbers with yours. You're on the neck testing form from January 6th?
Yes, mine says January 3rd. That's probably when we submitted it.
It could just be.
So it might be best if I had the
chance.
What's
the heading? What's the heading number? Is it 2B1.3? 2B1.
Starts at 2B1 III.
Okay, so on mine, for some reason, that's back down on page 36. Okay.
Let me get to where you are then.
Well, I'm at 2B1 III. Yeah.
Okay.
Dave Nairns here. I don't want to belabor this, but I think it's actually pretty important when we come down to the finish line here. In the figure, for me, it's the bottom of page 42. This is 2B1VB. I wonder if we could be very clear. If I look at the bar on the right, for example, I'm curious, what exactly is the y-axis here? Does this mean that 75.5% of those patients have independently said that they got better, or is it that 75% achieved a numeric improvement on the photo scale that corresponds to the MCII, like 10 points or 5 points, something like that? To me, that difference is crucial.
Yes. Well, let me take a run at that. So that's a great table, but if you go back up to page 41, there's a little table.
Can you go by the letters? Because I think we have different page numbers.
Yes, I'm sorry. Table 2B1V-A.
Okay.
So you can see that the highest performers, their patients exceeded the MCII. That's 73%, whereas the lower performance, only about 42% exceeded the MCII. Keep in mind that MCII is by definition a minimal level of improvement. So, you know, patients might or might not achieve, by the time they complete their episode of care, if we're using the PROM, a patient may have a better score. So the MCII might be a score improvement of, say, 8 points, but that was their perception of minimally important improvement, yet they went on to make more improvement than that. So MCII is minimal. So the low performers, only 42% met or exceeded the MCII versus average versus high.
Okay. But just to clarify, we're talking about an 8-point improvement on the photo scale, right, not on some other thing?
An 8-point improvement on the photo neck measure scale based on the global rating of change where the patient, so the global rating of change would be, we take that threshold of the global rating of change score of plus 3 or better. And you start by finding that on the neck measure, a global rating of change for this patient will say they have at least a 3 or better corresponds to at least an 8-point improvement on the photo scale. And I'm making up 8, but.
So, David, Naren's going back to your question. Do you feel like you have an answer to the question that you just asked?
Well, I guess I do. And I guess I line myself up with Dave Sell. I'd really like to see at the clinic or provider level, pretty simple correlation or, some kind of comparative analysis between two things. The average photo score improvement, which has been used here to identify deciles and low and high performers, everything else. You got that. And then separately, the percent of patients who report a global change improvement greater than 3. I presume this can be done pretty quickly, but that is not, I think, what I'm seeing on page 42, for example.
Is that page 39, though? Sorry, 2B1IV-B? Were you looking at decile of, I presume, again, sort of if these axes were labeled a little better, it would make it clearer, but it looks like that's decile of photo score, and then what you're plotting on the y-axis is the percentage of patients who met the MCII?
Yeah, except the MCII is just defined by a unit of change on the photo score, so it's photo score on the X and photo score on the Y.
Right, right.
That's
the circular nature, right? That's what we're trying to get away from.
I want to see something else on the Y.
Right. That's helpful. I wanted to make sure I didn't misinterpret. I mean, that this is Sam. I did rate it as low, and that was some of my concern was that I did find some of this circular as well, and so share the concern that Dave pretty clearly describe both days.
Well, we could easily do what you're asking for. Our approach, the MCII, takes into account the global rating of change and in a more, maybe more complicated way.
This is Dave Sella. I have the impression, so we're obviously a little bit uncomfortable, some of us are a little bit uncomfortable. By the same token, I have to say, I have the impression that you probably have what we need. It's just not quite put together that way. I mean, it'd be nice to see the global rating of change, really parsed out from the score, the MCII definition. Maybe on the y-axis as an example, but it seems to me like we're in this, and Karen, you can help again on this maybe, we're in this sort of period of review. It's relatively early in that period because this is our first call if we're going to have another one, and there is opportunity, I think, for you to provide more clarification on, helping us get out of the circularity concern, and that would enable this to, to avoid another round of revision prior to going to the full review committee.
You're right, Dave. It's easily done.
But unfortunately, we can't do it that way. We can't allow kind of additional stuff at the middle, even though I know we still have another call. For one thing, we're not allowing it and haven't allowed it for other developers.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I should have known better.
That's okay. I mean, maybe we'll figure out eventually how to be able to do this because it is often iterative. But we won't be able to do that this time.
Well, then, there is information in front of us. I suppose we can vote with what we have, understanding that, sometimes our votes are, they have to, whatever degree of leap of faith one might put into it.
Right.
Or not.
I think I would take, see what's there, see if you feel like that it is doing the kind of construct validation that you would expect at the clinician and clinic level. If not, then I would say vote insufficient. And I think Deanna, has heard what you're saying. And I think the only thing that I want to make sure that I'm clear on, just so everybody's clear, the suggestion is to potentially, depending on what you rate things as, the suggestion is to compare the performance rate at the clinic and clinician level to this global rate of change value. But I was a little unclear as to whether the global rate of change is actually external of the photo, or is it just the same, using the same photo data. So my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that you're looking for something external that you can compare, not just something derived from the photo measure itself.
Right, but just to add to that, I understand that the global rating of change is separate from the patient's functional rating on the data element.
Okay,
that's
as long
correct.
As it is, I got a little lost in the conversation.
Yeah.
So okay, all right.
Yeah, they're separate, and that's where the value would be. And so I think our task is to decide if we think that, the probability that that's what we would see. had we the opportunity to see it. And apparently it was in part in the last submission. I don't know if we can refer back to the last submission.
Deanna, this is Sam Stolpe. Did you include a correlation or some analysis between that global rate of change and the performance instrument at the clinic level and at the instrument level?
Probably not in the way you're asking. The global rating of change is inherent in the MCII, so I think that's why we weren't looking at it that way. We assume that that's presumed, and I can see that we're, next time we would call it out more specifically. But the MCII is based on the global rating of change. We can't get there without that separate global rating of change marker.
Hi, this is Ashley. I just wonder, in the interest of time, if we could call the vote based on, again, reiterating what Karen said, having you guys vote based on what's in front of you now, Deanna, hearing kind of specifically what the panel would like to see potentially in the future, have you guys go ahead and vote and submit, and then we'll see what comes out and determine next steps from there.
Could I say one more thing?
Sure.
If we were to do something like that, which, as I said, it could easily be done, if we look at, you were looking at the table, figure 2B, 1IV-A, validity of performance at the clinician level, for example, if we took the data that we had and did the simpler table that I think you're talking about, the line would look like what you're seeing there. It would be an upward diagonal line from left to right, which is kind of demonstrated by those three columns there.
Dave Nurse, if I can just take another swing at it, I realize we do need to kind of close out here. The reason I said what I said about you got, photo on the X and photo on the Y is that, the MCII basically is a way running in the background that says, for patients to say, I've experienced a meaningful improvement, I need to improve 8 points or better on the photo score. Okay, that's behind the scenes. Now what we do is you say, okay, I'm going to divide my units into 10 based on something like average improvement on the photo score. And then on the y-axis, I'm going to do what percent of patients got an 8-point improvement or better on the photo score. So it's kind of two mathematical spins at the same concept. It's not really anything independent. Now, I'm very sympathetic to the idea that buried underneath it is this idea of the global rating of change. And I think I'm trying to do the sort of the spin the math inside out and say, well, could you possibly get, percent over 8 without somehow automatically implying a higher percentage of people who would say, I did more than 3 points better in the global rating. I guess it would be far cleaner, but I understand from Karen the process is trouble now. It's just to take that thing independently and say, okay, make that the y-axis, and then it wouldn't have this circularity problem. But I don't know. Did that help any?
Yeah, we can. As I said, I regret that we didn't do that. This approach is what has worked in the past with our NQF submissions. So we, took that forward, and it seemed like it would work based on the feedback from last fall as well. Otherwise, we would have been happy to do it. And what you're asking could easily be done, and it would end up looking very similar to what you're seeing with the general trend.
Yeah, I think so. And I will say I'm very sympathetic to the idea that you're asked for one thing and then you seem to be asked for another thing on another cycle. And as somebody who's been on the other side of this a couple times in other contexts, I appreciate the difficulty, and I'm trying to be sympathetic to that.
Well, and for the sake of, we partner with NQF in ever-evolving the science, and we learn from every interaction. And yeah, sometimes it's just a matter of a different scientific method panel wants something different from the last, and we're okay with that too. But, for the sake of evolving, I do appreciate what I've learned from you today, and we would definitely intend to roll that in to the ongoing evolution of the science.
Okay. That said, does the methods panel feel comfortable voting at this point on validity and moving on to the next discussion?
Yep.
Okay. So please go ahead and select your validity vote, and you should be able to submit for that measure. And then I am going to hand it over to Sam and Karen to lead the discussion for the
CAPS
measure.
Very good. Thank you, Ashley. This is Sam Stolpe. We're going to be discussing CAPS measure 0.005, and this isn't a single amount, but it's because we're going to use this as a illustration for a broader discussion that has implications for each of the CAPS measures. So I won't belabor the point too much with the description of the measure. I think everybody on the call has a fairly intimate familiarity with the CAPS measures, but measure 0005 is the CAPS Clinician and Group Survey. And as you know, it's a standardized survey instrument that asks patients to report their experiences with their care providers over a period from the preceding 6 months. So the survey itself has both an adult and a child form. Each of those has 5 measured domains. And one thing I wanted to remind the scientific methods panel, just as a general approach to this measure and these types of measures broadly, is that we would consider each of those 5 domains or sections, if you will, as a independent measure that you may have a different rating on. So you may rate, for example, item 5, which is overall rating of provider, which consists of a single item. You may rate that one as insufficient. The other 4 would move on from the adult CGCAP survey 3.0, but that one would need to be revisited and additional testing added, just as an example. If one composite scores low, you can elect to say, well, we thought that one did not meet certain thresholds, so we were going to say that that one's low, but the other ones move on. So just another way of saying it, this isn't an all or none. You have to pass all aspects of the survey instrument in order to say that it's reliable and valid. You can take it piecemeal. Okay, so that is actually going to be pertinent to our discussion, but I'll continue just describing what we have here. So type of measure, of course, is an outcome pro PM, and the level analysis is at the clinician and group practice. The measure is risk-adjusted. It's an optional case mix risk adjustment based on four factors: general health status, mental health status, age, and education. Now, let's go ahead and move directly to the reliability discussion. This measure passed with moderate reliability, but was pulled by staff specifically to have a discussion around the broader implications associated with the types of testing that were presented by the measure developers for each of these CAP surveys. The measure developer calculated Chromebox alpha on each composite of the survey. Now, while the methods panel's members noted an adequate performance generally, the care coordination composite for both the adult and child alpha scores was noted to perform at a 0.55 and 0.39, respectively. And the other thing to note is that because the single items elements of this, you know, have nothing to compare them with specifically within that item, we didn't have data element testing presented for global items across all of the CAP surveys that were submitted. So what we'd like to do is have a discussion around why we would possibly consider that as a concern or rate this as insufficient for that particular item. If, in fact, NQF has this requirement that for all pro PMs, we need to have both data element and score level reliability and validity testing presented, well, what does that actually mean? So we had one other item to note, and that was related to the risk adjustment. So, but I think what I'd like to do is just highlight that very briefly and say that we'll cover that in some more detail and just go directly into a discussion related to the reliability of the instrument itself. So the first general concern was related to the low performance of the care coordination portion of that, of the survey. So this was pointed out by several committee members, but was not necessarily reflected in the vote. So we wanted to make sure that we had an opportunity for discussion with the added reminder that we can tease out individual performance measures within this set of measures that are presented as a CAP survey, pro PM. Okay, with that, so I'll go ahead and open up the discussion around the care coordination score that was noted by several committee members to be low.
Go ahead.
Sorry, this is Ron Hayes. Are you opening it up for the CAPS team or the NQF people?
Oh, sorry, for the methods panel to discuss.
Okay, sorry.
So if it's helpful, I can reiterate the question that we're discussing.
Well, Dave Nerenger, I can jump in a little bit. Since in the end we're asked for an overall assessment of reliability, I'd have to say I wasn't bothered by either of the two Chromebox alpha levels that were low. I noted them. I got them yellow highlighted here. But then when you just jump down and you look at the provider score level of reliability, even for these items, it tends to be high. And the reason why I think that can work is that, you know, you can take two items and call them care coordination, and you have to label them something if you want to put them together. Now, if they don't correlate really highly, as reflected in the Kronbach's alpha, you might say, well, that, you know, it's weak evidence that there's an underlying factor or that the thing's reliable. But then if you seem to me, anyway, that if you could show at the score level that they behave in a reliable fashion, I was willing then to say overall across the two levels looked okay. So at least that was my line of thinking there.
And this, Joe, I think I brought this up as a concern, but, you know, in the explanation in the 2A2.4, you know, I was okay with it because of the composite and the global ratings had the site-level reliabilities. And that's kind of how I looked at all of these. You know, what is it actually measuring? Site versus, you know, provider to provider.
So this is EQ. I actually have a question about how Kronbach alpha were calculated. So as I understand, this is a scale, so you can calculate Kronbach alpha at patient level based on, you know, survey response category, or you could based on after using apply the top box procedure, so it'll be binary. And or you can do it at the provider level. For this survey, my impression is right, you are not using scale score. Instead, you're using for each item within a scale, you apply the top box scaling, and then you identify for each particular item proportion of patient response, top response. So really, you're compositing a score at a specific at clinician level. So it's not typical. It's not like you composite a score at patient level and then roll out. You actually roll out to the facilitated level, then roll out to composite. So, and I noticed across multiple CAP surveys, and like for hospital CAP survey, they calculate Kronbach alpha at the right level. At, you know, after, because the component will be at a facilitated level item score. But here, my impression is at a patient level. Maybe developer can clarify.
So that's a question for the measure developer. We invite your comments at this time.
I'll let Westat be clear on that, but I think what was said before that last comment is really the key. Often we do estimate Kronbach's alpha at the patient level, and we don't consider that to be the important reliability. We do it because everybody wants to see it, and it gives you a little information. Really, the key is, like the previous person said, the site level is what we're interested in because we're not interested in the reliability at the patient level. And the site level reliabilities are provided in table, you know, different tables, I'm sure you know, around page 1010 is one example. But so for care coordination and that's all we can do for the global rating items is to do site level reliability because we only have a single item. That's what our focus is, and that's the basis of all the recommendations for using CAPS. So I don't know if there's – one thing we should say about care coordination is it is a very difficult concept to measure and to get items that are internally consistent. And, you know, that's something we've struggled with for a long time as far as internal consistency reliability is. But, again, our main focus is to make these things reliable at the unit that it's being compared at or reported at.
And ZQ's question also included some elements related to top box scoring, which actually we can have the measure developer weigh in on both that issue as well as ZQ's question related to the top box scoring. ZQ, am I missing anything else that was inside of your question?
No, I just like it. I mean, NKF require you to provide for like some measure. Right? You need to require both data element and score level reliability. And I also want to get other people's info on the panel because it appears that across, it just happened this round, there are multiple CAP measures. So different developers seem to be doing that differently. There are some, I mean, I would agree with a lot of what hospital CAP measures, what they did. I think everything they did is at a measure at specified level. It's not, so it's one thing like how you specify measure, how you roll them up, but some are doing at a different level.
Okay, so we can maybe put a peg in that one and just go to the measure developer to ask them the question that you had before, which I don't know if it needs to be restated or if the measure developer feels comfortable answering the question.
This is Naomi Yount from WestDAT. If the question is for the Chromebox Alpha, was it the based on the top box score versus the full scale score? It was the full scale score at the patient level. At the respondent level.
Right. So here we are using top box score, right? And not just top box score, also at a sensitivity level, each item you get a top box score and then you load them up. Like for one scale, we have 5 items. For every facility, you calculate top box score for that item for that facility. And then you have 5 score and then you composite that 5 facility level item specific score into one composite score. Am I understanding that right?
Well, just one thing to note about that is top box is sometimes reported, but not always. So we use more of the distribution as well. So sometimes you will see top box presented here for different purposes. But one of the reasons we have reliability, you know, that's not top box is because the scores are also used in a more continuous way in CAPS.
So the question, how do we line up the evidence provided with the measure as specified? Now, I understand some you can use as a linear mean score or you can use task box score. So for each specified purpose, you need to have, you know, relevant evidence, right?
So this is Karen from NQF. Let me give a shot here. First of all, it sounds like they're saying that when they did the Chromebox Alpha calculations, they were not using top box. They were just using the whole scale at the patient level. That's typically what we've seen in the past, and that's what we kind of expect to see. And then when they do their score level testing, since that is specified for top box, they would, you know, use the top box, and I think the calculation, and developers can correct me if I'm wrong, I think the calculation is, as you described it, CQ, top box for each of the items, and then averaging over across ever how many items in the domain. So that, it sounds like that's what they've done. That sounds like what we have expected and have accepted in the past. I guess the question is there any reason to think that we should be expecting that patient-level data at top box versus not top box? And I think that's more of a question for you guys. Again, we are – the way they – it sounds like they've done it is what we've accepted in the past. So the question for you might be, have we wrongly accepted that in the past?
I think the question actually – I probably didn't make it clear. So the different – is that's important. You at the patient level, you can use survey format to calculate Chromebox Alpha, or you can use top box format to calculate. They probably will be similar. My concern is more because we are not derived a composite score at patient level, then roll them up. We actually get a score at item level. So when you roll them up, you are not using composite score at patient level. So should we calculate, you know, Chromebox Alpha at the facility level instead of at patient level? I think this is, I'm just curious, what other panel members think on this issue?
This is Joe. I just, you know, I guess my question would be, what would you expect to see in that difference between the two? I mean, are you expecting significantly different results than the method that they chose?
I don't know. But so here, right, we accept overnight hospital cap measure do it that way, and then some this measure do it this way, and there are other measures do it this way. So I'm just saying, do we accept it either way, or do you think that's a reasonable thing to do? Because it is relevant when you talk about composite, how you composite them matter, right?
Yeah, I agree. But I don't think it should be restricted to one way or the other.
Sounds like that is another one of these things that we need to put on our list for methods panel discussion later on. You know, unless Dave Sella or Sam or Mary Beth or others, you know, have.
This is Dave Sella. I think we've had an ample discussion of reliability on this particular submission. My suggestion is really more structural to NQF, and that is, you know, related to the idea that we can, in the case for something submitted with five or six, performance measures within it, that we can pull one out one way or the other and have different ratings, that the format be structured so that that's possible to do. I mean, I was among the people. I rated moderate because there were really no concerns about most of them, and a minor to moderate concern about the care coordination, but that's been discussed. So just if we had some way to actually on the form, I'm not advocating five or six separate forms, but some way on the form to be able to pull one out explicitly would be good.
Okay, we might be able to handle it. We'll think about how to do that, but that is actually one reason that we wanted to call this to your attention, just to make sure that everybody knows, even though it's not apparent on the form, that you can always call out these individual performance measures.
I think what we heard is that we did. I mean, several people did call out one. Yeah.
So it sounds like even though you called it out, you pointed out concerns, you're still okay with the moderate ratings for that particular one. I'm not hearing.
I am. We can all. I think there's probably a readiness to vote, unless anyone wants to say more.
We actually may not need to vote. This is really just a discussion.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Unless the tide has a very significant shift, which it doesn't sound like there is, then we probably don't need to revote. So unless someone's calling for it, which I don't get the impression that they are. So if that's the case, then we can move to the other item for discussion.
Right. The global item.
Correct.
Right.
So let's just go ahead and revisit any residual things that need to be discussed outside of this conversation. But for the global item scores, so just to remind you what we're talking about here, there's several items in the CAPS surveys which have a single item. Now, NQF's criteria is that you need to show data element testing. And obviously for a Chromebox Alpha, there is no internal consistency to be discussed for single items. But you could make the argument that if it is true that demonstrating internal consistency is sufficient for data element reliability, then all single items are sufficient by their nature. And it appears that that's what the committee did by passing these measures, but we just want to call out that we have noted that data element testing was not performed for the single items, and allow the committee to discuss whether or not that is appropriate and or how we could potentially do it differently if, in fact, we should. So we'll turn it over to you to discuss.
This is Dave Sella. I mean, you know, Dave Nairns is leading a reliability white paper, which, you know, is going to pick up these issues, and a lot of that is probably more appropriate for that general discussion than on a particular. I don't know if we're still talking about 0005, but But we've talked about, and apparently have not acted on it in here, but we've talked about stability, you know, test-retest reliability being actually probably more important than internal consistency, but less convenient or less available. So I guess, you know, that's what I would say, is that ideally we would see, you know, that these are stable measures, and because that's when we really think about reliability and the kind of reliability that you need as an essential for validity downstream, it's the test-retest reliability.
Yeah,
which
Dave,
we don't have any.
Thanks, Dave. I was thinking along the same lines. I'm not sure I'm willing, just as a matter of concept or principle, to give a pass on reliability to single items, although I understand you can say they're internally consistent because it's just one, but I don't think that does the job. But I'm curious for Ron, if Ron is on the call. There's a huge amount of development work on CAFs, and way back in the development, was there some test reliability done on some of these single items, like you give patient survey and then wait for the memory to fade and then go back 3-4 days later, a week later, ask again? Does that exist? I think it probably does, or it might.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of that. The problem we have is that this is supposed to be update, so we can't give you the whole history of everything that's been done. I also want to point out that we do have the main reliability here in the site-level reliability for the single item. Now, you could have test-retest as well, and, in fact, probably one thing, I mean, unfortunately, I don't know exactly what data set we would use, but you could look at reliability on the single item for the units, you know, over, like, a year time period, not a test-retest time period, but even that would probably be pretty stable in a lot of cases, and I know in Medicare caps, there would be an opportunity there, but that's not the data we presented. So historically, yeah, there's probably a little bit. I'm also not a huge fan of test-retest reliability, except for a single item when you're using it for individual purposes, but there is a little data, but it's, again, it's historical.
Yeah, that's okay. And, again, as I said back in the beginning, I'm in this mix of things, I tend to be more swayed by the site-level reliability statistics. But since it's essentially a checkbox item, given the way NCAP has structured the review, I just was curious if it was out there already.
This is Mark Elliott from RAND. We published a paper about HCAPs a couple years ago that shows hospital-level correlations over time. And those are pretty high. So we could send that citation if that would be of general interest.
So this is Karen from NQF. I think you already have in your submission sufficient what we would call score level reliability. So that's not in question. Really, the question is we didn't see what we would call data element reliability testing for the single item measures. And typically one would see a test retest. Possibly there are other methods for that. We're just stating, A, that we didn't see anything for that at the patient level for the two single item measures in this particular one, but it's true across the board for all the CAPS measures. And not just calling out CAPS measures, it's not unusual for other instrument-based measures not to give us that sort of stuff for data element reliability for single items. So the difficulty is that our criteria state that we need to have it. So our question for our methods panel is, are we asking too much for single items, or are we asking the right thing and we just are not seeing it? And, of course, the implications of that is if we should be asking it and we're not seeing it, then for the global items, the rating should have been insufficient. That's kind of the implications here.
Would any of our panelists like to opine on that? We'd welcome your opinion.
So let me ask this question. If some developers submit a measure based on one item only, how do we evaluate that?
That's a really great question. We've kind of teetered in the past. I think in some cases it's gone down because we've said, hey, we want to see some kind of test retest or something. But it can be tricky because one might could argue that that one item only makes sense at the score level. So I think it's been kind of a mixed case in the past. So we've kind of done both, I think.
And related question is not part of a cap. In some other I have seen, like, they have global rating item, and then obviously it may also assume the validity relative to all the global item. You can say yes or no, I mean, depends. But then they go on to use global rating item as criteria to evaluate other scale score. So, mm-hmm. so first, may assume the validity. I mean, I'm not talking particularly to this measure, and I have seen others. So, how do we handle that?
Yeah, generally, we have allowed that in the past because we, you know, assume that they are individual performance measures. So, in the past, we have accepted that.
So, you know, this, Joe, are you then saying this would be a new standard if we change what's accepted?
Not necessarily. If we have in fact had measures go down because they didn't present data element reliability for a single item, then this would just be carrying forward something that we've done in the past. But I can't say explicitly that that's the case, Karen. You mentioned that it was.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's kind of gone both ways in the past. You know, I think what, you know, our dilemma is, you know, I think in the past sometimes they have gone down because we've pointed out, hey, we want to see this, you know, maybe test retest or something along those lines, something, and we don't see it, and therefore we're sending it back, right, not passing it through. But for example, the CAPS measures, these don't have it. But those, right now, with the votes that we have right now, would go through. So we're being inconsistent. I think I'm just kind of back to my question, you know, should we be expecting to see some sort of reliability testing at the patient level, for the single items? If so, then we need to think about revoting or maybe just making an overall determination for those if that wasn't there. But if that's asking too much,
then we need to say it's asking too much. This is Dave. I don't think it's asking too much, but as Ron pointed out, given this is a submission, it's not a new submission. You know, there wasn't a request for it, so they have it, and it's available apparently in a paper that we can be sent. And so I'm trying to separate discussion of 0005 from the general question. And to the general question, I don't think we should relax that criterion. But I also don't think it should be applied to a vote here because this is not a new submission, and we know the data exists.
This is Paul Curry. Could I make a comment?
Sure.
Is it possible that some of the items that quote unquote went down or were not voted favorably on were designed to assess differences at the individual level? I think we all agree that CAPS is a unit level assessment. That's why we place less emphasis on that. If we were posing it to differentiate individual level experiences, I think that might be more applicable.
Related to Paul's comment, just to tack on to something, this is Mark. If you think about the correlation over time in a single global item measure, say at the hospital level, The sources of variance are both true changes in the hospital's performance and the lack of retest reliability at the patient level. So in some sense, establishing high stability at the facility level is a stricter criterion that encompasses the person-level criterion because its correlations fall due to either a lack of person-level test-retest reliability or true facility-level change. So in that sense, I would think that good stability at the facility level would actually meaningfully inform the question of whether there's adequate test-retest reliability.
Well, you're suggesting that your facility can't have good reliability if the question itself is unreliable and, you know, that it's a limiting. And, you know, I guess that's something we should take up when we talk about this more generally. But, again, are we talking about 005 or are we talking about the general issue? We're talking about 005, right?
We're kind of talking
about
both.
I think we're talking about general issue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a general issue, but it could affect 005 and every other CAHPS measure in front of you.
Right.
That's kind of where we are, right? So,
right.
So.
Well, I'm just realizing we have about 7 minutes, and if we're finished with 005, then let's decide that, and then we might have more time to talk about the general issue with the benefit of the experts from RAND on the call. Are we finished with 0005?
I think so. I mean, we were using 0005 as just kind of an exemplar to discuss three items. Number one, the first item was to make sure that you guys know that you could, you know, pull individual performance measures, you know, even if it's one NQF mm-hmm. number. And that was the care coordination discussion. The second
right.
item was this idea of single item performance measures and not having any kind of reliability testing presented
mm-hmm.
for those, which is against,
right.
You know, doesn't meet our requirements. The third item that Sam had alluded to was just the risk adjustment for this measure and the other CAHPS measures. It's kind of the typical way that the CAHPS measures operate. So they, I'll paraphrase, the idea is they offered risk adjustment and note that some people may use it and other people may choose not to use it. We were going to make the statement that what we understand to be being put forward for endorsement is the risk-adjusted version. And the question for the methods panel really was along the lines of we assume that as you were going through that you were you had no concerns with the risk adjustment approach and that you realized that that's what's being put forward for endorsement.
So we handled the first, and I think we've handled the second, at least my suggestion, since I guess we're not voting, my suggestion is that when, if/when this goes forward to the parent committee, if you will, for review, that they be notified that, you know, we didn't evaluate the, you know, element reliability and think it should be reviewed in light of, you know, as an exception perhaps based upon your criteria. And then maybe we have the last 5 minutes for the third question. Is that fair?
Sounds good.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Excuse me. This is Alan DeSalsi at Harvard, and I'm on the CAMP team. I just want to point out that, you know, we're talking about the lack of multiple items to do with Cronbach alpha for the rating items. We do a different kind of assessment across multiple items, which is when we regress the criterion, the rating items, which are generalized assessments on the specific report items. And we do look at the relationships between the items, but it's not symmetrical. The criterion item of general ratings are looked at in a different way than the others. And so the regression approach rather than a purely correlational approach is appropriate there. But I think it gives you a lot of the same kind of information about finding the existence of relationships among items that are expected under the understanding of what the items are supposed to mean.
I bet Dave Nairns has taken notes, and we'll be taking this up in that reliability paper, huh, Dave?
So his, was that Alan on there just now?
Yeah.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, hi, Alan. Yeah, I'm happy to take notes. Instructive every time I talk to you.
Do we have time to handle the risk adjustment question?
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and try to tackle that? So, once again, just our interpretation is that the risk adjustment measure is what we're endorsing. We assume that with your from your moderate score that you gave to this, that you're happy with the risk adjusted method, and just want to confirm that that's true. Because this was listed as optional, so that's what prompted the concern. The assumption is that if it is impactful, that if the models are actually showing that the risk adjustment makes a difference, then what we've done in the past is say that we would like to see risk adjustment, and that the onus is on the measure steward to provide the modeling.
So maybe in the interest of time, did anybody review this measure and kind of disregard the risk adjustment, or did anybody feel like that the risk adjustment was inappropriate and therefore may need a different rating on this or any of the other CAPS measures? Again, not just singling out 555. We just want to verify.
Well, this is Dave. I certainly didn't disregard it. I did wonder about the optional thing, but I figured that since this is not a new measure, this had gone through this way in the past. I think I even read that, so I thought I didn't see any reason to change course, so I went along with it. But I didn't disregard it. I don't really understand why they're not why it's done. The model was presented as a great model, but it's not required. I didn't really understand that.
So, Dave, do you mean why the CAPS team doesn't require it, or why NQF, or what?
We
are in favor of case mix in general, but we can't enforce that like on NCQA. So we could say this is a good approach, but that's all we can do.
Well, they can say
okay,
that.
Okay, well, so in other words, CMS or NQF or NCQA, they could require the risk adjustment, you're saying?
Well, NCQA may not require it. That would be the other way of looking at it. And CMS uses case mix routinely.
So it is a little confusing. I think it's been confusing over the years. So NQF doesn't endorse an unadjusted version and an adjusted version. So what we would be endorsing and what we've understood that we've endorsed all these years is the risk-adjusted version, knowing that out in the world people can choose to not use that. We can't, NQF has no power.
That's very helpful. I mean, I was working off of a submission that made it seem like the NQF endorsed measure, maybe I misread it, but I did get the impression that the NQF endorsed measure would say, well, you can use it or not, it's up to you, and that that didn't make sense to me. But
Now
it makes sense.
Right, because our requirement is that you test the specifications. So we need to say what it is specifically that we're talking about. So we just want to make sure that we're talking about the risk-adjusted version and that that the measure testing falls in line with that, if that was your assumption.
Well, if there was an assumption, it was that. Meaning I wasn't clear. Maybe I should have been, but I get it now, and I thought the risk adjustment was quite good and thorough. And I'm glad that it's part of the required measure if it goes forward.
Okay.
What do others think?
Yeah, Dave, this is Sam. I had a similar read. I mean, this to me almost seems like an implementation issue. I mean, we're evaluating the risk-adjusted measure, so that's kind of the assumption I proceeded under.
Well, I think we're good then. No other comments. We're hitting the hour, and sounds
all so timeless good. Does imply consent, so we can go with that.
That's good. Yeah, I'm sorry, Dave Nierens here. I got a really hard stop top of the hour here and got to run, but I'm okay where we are.
All right, we'll cut loose.
All right. So I think we're good. Thank you all, and we'll be in touch.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, developers.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.